We are hopefully going to finish Perek Yud Ches. I didn't realize how close to the end of the Perek we were, but there's plenty to talk about in the next four psukim anyway, so we'll keep it at that. We are in Mishlei Yud Ches 18, Pasuk Chas Aleph, 1821. Yeah. Okay, last week we had finished off with a wonderful pasuk, wonderfully informative pasuk, insightful pasuk, which was Mipri fi ish tispa bitno. From the mouth of a person, their belly will be satiated. From the mouth of a person, their belly will be satiated. And we talked then last week about the importance of how we speak about what happens to us in our lives. And a few times after that, I was reminded of it because of what people were saying or because of what I was saying. And we had talked about the importance of framing things out in the open, even if we've already understood them, the way that we describe them is going to formulate how we think about them. It doesn't make much sense because we can't understand the human psyche. But even though we've already thought about something, the way that we speak about something will change how we think about something. It's a real thing. Because as long as it's in your head, you have the opportunity. It could be like this, it could be like that. And we've talked in a number of ways about this concept. I've talked about how when, for instance, thinking about giving over a class for me, for giving over a drasha, a sermon from the pulpit, I could think about it and think about it and think about it, but until I actually say it, I haven't officially determined what I'm going to say. Because things can still change. And when you say them out loud, it really, you know, you think back and say, wow, it's not where I thought I was going. I thought I was thinking to say that this, and then it turns out I actually ended up wanting to talk about that because you verbalize it, you concretize it, and it leads you in different directions when you have to give more focus to it in the tangible sense. Last couple of weeks I've had some I don't know what you call it, sermon's remorse about certain words. I could use better words, you know, just in my mind, you know. I use this word, I think it would have hit a little hit home a little harder. But I think that's fine.
Like playing piano, like there's a remorse about, like I play that certain passage.
Okay, there's some remorse in all aspects of life, sure. Let's look, but now with that understanding, let's look at Chaf Aleph, because that's going to be a very important backdrop to understanding this one. 21, Maves v'chaim biyad lashon. Death and life are in the hands of the mouth or of the speech. V'ohaveha yochal tirya. And he or they who love it, presumably speech, will eat its fruit. Okay. Some flowery language again from Shlomo Melech, which we're used to, and now we have to decipher it. Death and life are in the hands of the tongue or the speech. So what does that mean? So if one were to look at Metudas David, and Metudas David explains, it's with the strength or the power of speech that a person is given the possibility of life or death. If you use your speech, you use your ability to speak for good things, for talking about Torah, so then you will be granted life. If, however, you use your speech for evil talk, so then ultimately, yamos, you will die. This sounds, at least according to the way Mr. Savitz positions it, a simple arithmetic formula. You say good things, Hashem will reward you. You say bad things, you will be punished. That's what it sounds like. But I would like to say that maybe Mr. Savitz is speaking more figuratively. When someone uses their speech for positive things, for I would call optimistic things in a positive sense, right? Talking about people in a good way, complimenting them, so then you'll bring yourself life. We know that we say in the Sukkot Zimra of Shabbos, which is in Tehillim, we say, Mi ha'isha chafetz chaim, who wants life, who desires life? Ohev yamim liros tov. Now, typically we see that as one long phrase, together. I mean, who is the one that wants life and loves to see good things? The person who's an insor l'shon chamera, the person who can speak properly. That's why the Chafetz Chaim is called the Chafetz Chaim. But you could interpret that pasuk as two separate phrases, one coming in response to the other. Who is the one who wants life, who desires life? Question mark. The person who wants life is the one who's truly looking throughout his days for good things. They're looking throughout their life for the good things. Right? When they go and they see, they see an old friend and they say, what's going on with you? So they will quickly point out the good things in their life. I'm sure you know, people are familiar with others. Oh, what's going on? Oh, I am having such a bad day. Oh, last week was so terrible. Oh, if you knew what my kids were doing to me. Oh, if you knew my parents were bothering me like this. It's some people, the way that they look like, the way that they present their life is very pessimistic. It's not death in a literal sense, obviously, but it's as if their life is not worth it. It's as if they're not living life. They're not getting what they want out of life. So what does it mean, Mihaisha Chavetz Chaim? How do you know the person who really desires to have true life? It's the one who is Ohev Yamim Liros Tov, who loves their days to find good. They go through their days looking for good things, looking for positive things, always looking for the good in people, the compliments of other people. You can really tell the people that are enjoying life are the ones that are grateful for the things around them. I said this at my grandmother's funeral a couple months ago, that she was like this. She was always talking about, did you see this, did you see that? And, sometimes as grandkids or even as, people who knew her, it was often a fun thing to poke fun at because, she would talk about literally everything. She would tell us, did you see how the birds, did you see these trees, did you see these flowers? And it would be like she was so looking at every single little detail. She had something to say about everything. But it was always, always in a positive way, always looking at good things. And that's how she lived her life. She was a very positive person, a very fun person. And that's what I think of when I see this Mitzvah Tzavit. And it says, B'koach Halashem Maser Mavet V'Chaim, the way that you speak is going to dictate whether you're living a life of death or a life of life, a lively life. Someone who's really appreciating everything that they have is someone who's really living.
Didn't we meet previous or I've heard somebody kind of coming? I don't know, so to convey that be quiet and express yourself.
Okay, we're going to get to that in a little bit from now about speech because I'm about to give you another interpretation of this pasuk. But what you're saying is, I think, sort of someone who has the level of humility to not be.
Yeah.
To not be presumptuous or to not complain, something like that.
Yeah.
Okay, that also, that's definitely part of it. This is sort of getting a step further. Not only are you silent, to not complain, to not be pessimistic, but you're also being optimistic. You're also being complimentary. That's how I at least would explain Mr. Stubbard, if that's not literally what he means. If, however, you look at, I think it's the Rabbeinu Yonah, Rabbeinu Yonah. So Rabbeinu Yonah says you don't have Rabbeinu Yonah, so you can't look at it, but he says the following. Because once we've established that life and death are in the hands of the speech, someone who loves to speak, he's the one that's talking all the time, or she's the one that's talking all the time, a real yenta, as we say, you should always try with your speech to speak good, speak positively. Right, you should always strive to get reward for what you're saying. You should always speak about good things, proofs of life, or peace, or truth. And thereby you'll be able to reap the fruit of speaking positively. Right, because you can really get a lot of life out of how you speak. However, he is someone who loves to speak, you'll also get rewarded in terms of praise. You all look how well he speaks. Look how nicely he is to other people. V'izaher, however, be very careful. You should also be careful because the more you speak, the more probability it will be that you will slip into lashon hara. You'll slip into evil speech. The more you speak, the more you run the risk of saying something which is inappropriate. And this is something which doesn't necessarily sound like something we need to be told, but I think it's very important in the world we live in, because never in human history have there been more outlets, more availability to speak in different ways. It used to be that if you wanted to talk, you have to find somebody who's willing to listen, and you talk to that one person. Nowadays, you want to talk, you can pick up a phone, you can email, you can text, you can put it on Facebook. There are a whole number of ways that you can speak to everybody. There are so many ways you can speak to people. It's so easy to speak. Sometimes we get into the assumption, we get into the habit of speaking way too much to such an extent that we feel almost compelled to talk. I think this is one of the reasons why the world has become so polarized in so many different ways. So many different ways, right? You think about Judaism, right? People are becoming less religious or more religious. Nobody's just holding the line, you know? The conservative movement, everyone's becoming less observant. In the religious orthodox movement, everyone's becoming more religious. Slowly but surely, we're sort of polarizing. You think politically, right? Every Republican's sort of going even more further to the pole, to the extreme. And to the left also, to the Democrats, they're all polarizing to the left, right? Everyone is bifurcating and polarizing. Why is that? Why is that the case? Now, I'm sure there are other bunch of reasons. So I was talking to a Rabbi recently, Rabbi Terrigan. I was talking to Rabbi Terrigan when he was here 2 weeks ago. And he agreed with the sentiment. And I told him, I think it's because it used to be that if you wanted to give over information, there was a worth to what you said simply by telling somebody the reality. Simply telling someone the way that something is without editorializing it, without promoting your own opinion, without offering your own interpretation, that was enough to give you credence. You would turn on CNN and they would tell you about a news story that you had no idea about, and you had no other way of understanding those things. And therefore, these news organizations became valuable because we wouldn't know what's going on in the world without them. They didn't have to gain credence by giving their opinion, because they were already credible by telling us something we never knew. But nowadays, you don't need news organizations for that. It's not valuable for me to look at Fox News and say, hey, what's going on in Israel? I already know that. I can look on my Twitter and I can see what's going on. I can look at Facebook and see the people that are directly reporting from Israel. I don't need Fox News to tell me. I don't need MSNBC to tell me that anymore. So then Fox News and CNN are saying to themselves, well, if we want to still exist, we have to suggest more than just the reality. We have to give people more than just what's going on, because they don't need us for that anymore. And instead, they start editorializing. They start giving up their hot takes, their interpretations of things. Otherwise, people aren't going to watch. They don't need them anymore. And therefore, in order to be exciting, in order to be edgy, in order to be something which attracts or appeals to an audience, you have to give them something they haven't heard before. And that naturally means you have to get more extreme. There's no other way to be attractive than to be better than what someone's expecting. Expectation decides whether or not someone's going to be appealing to you. Right? If you've already had the same peanut butter sandwich every single day, so then it's not going to be appealing to you. If someone, well, I've got a really good piece of news for you. Here's this thing you already know. Why do I need you for? I'm going to watch somebody else. And therefore, everyone becomes polarized. Everything's polarized because everybody has already established at the status quo. And in order to be appealing, in order to be attractive, in order to be someone that somebody wants to listen to, you have to say something else. And I think about this apropos this Rabbeinu Yonah. Because there are people in this world, news organizations or otherwise, that feel like they have to say something. I don't think you have to. I spoke about this once in a drasha, I don't know, a year or two ago. That we have to hold back. We have to restrain ourselves from feeling the need to say something all the time. Sometimes there's nothing to say. Sometimes, even if you have some things to say, it's not worthwhile to say it. But in the world that we live in, it's so easy to say something. You could say, okay, I won't say it like this to somebody's face, but I'll say it on Facebook. I won't say it outright in a group of people, but I'll post it on my Twitter account. There's so many easy ways, sort of what we think of as non-threatening ways, or what we think of as low risk, low collateral ways of saying something. Okay, I'll just post it anonymously, or I'll post it like this. And we all feel like we have to say something. If we feel like we have to talk all the time, we will naturally get into this rut. We'll get into this habit of needing to say something that somebody's listening, that somebody's sort of compelling us to talk, somebody's trying to hear what we have to say, and therefore, we're going to say something wrong. Because we'll have nothing else to say. I think about this all the time in terms of talk show hosts. How How could you be a talk show? Your job is to talk. Literally, you are being compelled to talk or else you won't have a job. That's a terrible job. But it's like, so for me, I'm lucky because when as a rabbi, my job is to talk. But I'm talking about things that I haven't even learned yet. So for me, I'm giving over ideas that I've never seen, and therefore I don't have to come up with something on my own. I can just tell you what Rosh Shlomo Melech says. I don't know this already. You don't know this already. So I'm like the news of yesteryear, where people don't know anything, and just giving over what Shlomo Melech is saying is itself valuable. Right? So I'm lucky. But some people who have talk show hosts, those who have talk shows, everybody already knows the news. So their job is literally to make something up. They have to interpret it in a way that you never heard of, you never thought of before. And therefore, sometimes you'll wake up in the morning and you won't have a very solidified opinion. You won't have a good, important, and insightful thing to say, but you need to say something. So what are you going to say? You'll blur the line into what's appropriate and inappropriate because you need to say something. You're just compelled to. So that's what the Rabbi Yonah is saying here. Uberov dvarav lo yechzal pesha. With having to say so many things, you cannot prevent slipping up. Ultimately, you go down a path, which is a negative path, because you'll have to say something, and you won't have anything good to say.
You know, the people say, reading about Facebook, I know it's so unimportant, and make a big deal about it, like, it's such a waste of time, and some of the things that they're concerned about, like what your phone number is when you're a kid, or,
those silly things. Those are silly things, yeah. Right. There's
really wasteful.
Good for you. There are much more important things to worry about in life than silly things on Facebook. This is talking even more detrimentally. People feel like they have to say things, right? So for instance, a news story comes up and, you know, I'm sure some people, I don't know if you follow social media or whatever, I do this myself. Oh, I wonder what so-and-so has to say about this. You know, the leading talking heads in our generation. Oh, what does Rachel Maddow have to say about this? What is Sean Hannity? What is Tucker Carlson? You know, all these people that would be, you know, the talking heads that are always giving their opinions. So that's what everyone does. I wonder what so-and-so... And then the person feels like they have to say something, even if they haven't developed a nice thought. Maybe they just woke up. Maybe they had a tough night. Maybe their kids were in a bad mood in the morning. They got them in a bad mood, but they still have to say something. What are they going to say? They're going to say something inappropriate because they haven't fully thought it out, but they have to say something. Their show is at the same time every day. You better come up with something by that time. And sometimes sometimes I get in like a habituation if there's a specific topic that I'm really interested in. So I'll follow a person's interpretations of it sort of, you know, as they go. And sometimes I'll realize that like, this is the third day that I've heard this person talk about it and they haven't said anything new. And then they'll start rambling, saying the same thing over and over and over again because they have nothing else to say. That's the only thing you have to do because otherwise, you're going to go down in a slippery slope. So I think about this concept a lot when I listen to other people talk, especially people that feel like they have to talk. This Rabbi Yonah is so relevant to the world we live in because of that reality. Berav dvarav lo yechzal pesha. With having to say so much, you can't help but ultimately say something inappropriate. Here comes one of a woman's favorite psukim. One of a woman's favorite psukim. Matza isha, matza tov. You know what is good? You know what you know, and you know how you know you found something real good? If you found a good woman. So if you found a good woman, you found something really good. That's what it says, matza isha, you found a woman, matza tov. Not only that, but by finding a good woman and finding something good, vayafek rason me Hashem. You will curry favor from Hashem when you have a good woman. There's so many ways we can talk about this. Yeah, well, Shlomo Melech is talking as a man. But he's a man. But you're right. Same type of thing for sure. I would say, if I were to speak on behalf of Shlomo Melech, I would tell you that it's a lot harder for a man to control himself without a good woman than it is for a woman to control herself without a good man. Meaning like this. I know people know this. That and this is borne out by statistics, but also by trends that I'm familiar with, that that women are naturally more spiritual than men. It's true. It's a statistical reality. So much so that if you look at conservative and reform Judaism right now. The majority of rabbis are becoming women. Like the vast majority, it's not even close. Most rabbis in reform and conservative circles are women. Why is that? Because women are naturally more spiritual. They're naturally inclined to do the right thing. Men, and this is obviously an overgeneralization, and I don't mean to stereotype, but this is a real reality. This is a real, it's not a stereotype for no reason. And that's because men psychologically tend towards accomplishing things, and women tend more towards relationships, right? Women are satisfied by having good friendships. Men are satisfied by achieving their goals. So that is a very overgeneralization, but it's a very true reality. And because of that, women are more inclined to help other people, and men are more inclined to accomplish things, which is why you'll have many more women that decide to stay home and be a mother to their children than men who would prefer to go to the office and continue their, you know, to burn the midnight oil, as they say, as a lawyer, as a doctor, whatever. Right? And obviously women also become doctors and lawyers. I don't mean to say obviously. I feel like I have to say all these disclaimers. But statistics bear this out. This is just how the human psyche works. So when it comes to spirituality, the same thing is true. In order for a woman to stay in line, she requires a lot less pressure from the outside. But to keep a man in line, you need a good woman who's going to sort of force him, or not compel, not force, but make sure that he's doing the right thing. And that's what it means here, Vayafek Rason Mehashem. If you have a good woman at your side, so the husband will have been able to conquer themselves and to curry favor from Hashem. This is the definition of the pasuk. This is the explanation of the pasuk of Lo Tov Hayos Adam Levado. It's not good for man to be alone. Same word, Tov. You will not find any good if man is alone. But rather, Ase Lo Ezer Kenegdo. I'll make him a helper. Who is Kenegdo? What does the word Kenegdo mean? Opposite or against? In opposition to him. What does it mean in opposition to him? How are you going to be an Azer? How are you going to help him if you're opposite him? Because that's exactly the point. Men want to do things which will take them off the path, and the women are there to make sure that they don't go off that path. Women do a great job of that if you have a healthy relationship. If you have an unhealthy relationship, unfortunately, you can go the exact opposite direction.
There's women that are like people that are out in the world type of people.
Mm-hmm.
What about a man?
Finish your sentence.
What about a man that could help a woman to do that?
That's true too, but they're much less proportionately. There's much less of a need for that. Number one, Shlomo Melech talked from the men's perspective. We already pointed that out. But number two, I think first of all, you're right. But in terms of the reality of the world, women are much more sensible, much more in line because of their understanding of social, need and their sensitivities towards what's required of a just society. Women are more naturally oriented towards sensitivity and justice than men are. Men try to get away with things because they care about accomplishing things. Whereas,
what about all the men that are involved in social justice?
Yeah, there are men that do that too, for sure.
I don't agree with that.
Yeah, that's why I'm giving all these disclaimers. I'm not saying that this is 100% either way. I'm saying that this is generally, the proportions are this. Maybe there are 25% men that are like what you're saying. Maybe even more, I don't know. But it's certainly more of an issue for men to stay in line than it is for women, and that's why he focuses on that dynamic. But sure, it's definitely true that there are people on both sides. But if you look at this wording, it's a very interesting wording. Because the word matzah means what?
Fine.
Nope. Literally. If he found matzah isha, if he found, in the past tense, if he found a good wife, so then Masato, then he found goodness. There's a pasuk in, I believe it's Koheles, where it says, Motse ani marmi vaves. I find that there's something worse than death. Same person says it, Shlomo Melech. You know what the next words are? Esaisha. Without any clarifiers. Doesn't say bad wife. Motse ani marmi vaves esaisha. You know what's worse than death? A woman. What? Shlomo Melech. How could it be the same person? Shlomo Melech says the worst thing is a woman, and here it's saying the best thing is a woman. So which one is it, Shlomo Melech? So the Gemara has its own interpretation, but the Gra has a beautiful suggestion. And this gets to human psychology. The words matza isha are in the past tense. Matza isha matza tov. You found a good woman, then you found some good things. But motze ani mar mevavas, in the present tense, we're always inclined to look at the bad. Our first instinct is survival mode. What's doing wrong? What's going poorly for me right now? So motze ani mar mevavas, that's in the present tense. Right now, you know what's worse than death? This woman is bothering me right now. She's the worst. But in the past, we used to have such good times together. It used to be that she was so good. Matza isha, matza tove, she was so good. We have this terrible, literally terrible instinct, this terrible habit of thinking about good things only in the past tense. In the moment, we're much more inclined to focus on the negative because of our survival mode. We all have a natural survival mode that we've developed through human history that we're always trying to make sure that we're protected. And therefore, in the moment, and there are people like this, I'm sure you know, as I said before, when people that are saying, oh, this bad thing is happening to me, I have to watch out for that. You know, like the classic joke about, you say to the bubby, oh, mazel tov, this bar mitzvah boy, he lanes so well, aren't you so proud of him? He says, yes, I just hope he doesn't contract diphtheria. What are you talking about? Just be happy, he's doing the bar mitzvah, he got nachas. Yes, but I hope he doesn't fall off the bima. You know, like that's the Jewish mother mentality. Oh, but something terrible could happen right now. And some of that is historical. Some of that is intergenerational, you know, osmosis that they've learned from past experiences. But we always have an inclination. We always have that instinct to say, yeah, but maybe it's going to be bad. And therefore, we always have that survivalist instinct. And we're going to say, motze ani mar mimavas asa isha. Right now, things are terrible. This one, my wife is driving me crazy. Was it ever good? Yeah, it used to be good. When we first got married, it was so good in the past tense. You don't appreciate the things that are good in the present tense. And that's the warning that Shlomo HaMelech is telling us. That when it comes to our relationships, regardless of wife, spouse, doesn't matter. In our relationships, it's always important, as we said before, that mi ha'isha chavetz chaim oiv yavon leros tov, to find the good in people. To find the good, and specifically the people that are close to us. It's so easy to find the bad because of that survivalist instinct. We want to protect ourselves. We all want protection. We all need protection and security, and we'll look for it in any way that we can. And we'll get defensive by whatever. But the point is, we have to find the good. We have to find the good to not just say matza isha matza tova in the past, but motze isha motze tova. That when you find your wife, you are finding goodness. Right now, things are good. You have things to deal with, of course. There are always things to be better, to improve upon, to work on together. But you always have to find the good things. As Rav Terrigan quoted a Gemara in Yevamos that we did recently in Daf Yomi, there was a certain Amora that every time he asked his wife for a certain food, she would give him a different food. And at a certain point, the son caught on to what was happening, and the son would give over to the would ask the father, what do you want for dinner? And then he would say the opposite to his mother so that she would make what he really wanted, because she always made the opposite. And then afterwards, the rabbi says to his son, wow, your mom's cooking has gotten a lot better. Something along those lines. And the son explains to him, yes, because I'm telling her the other thing. And the rabbi says, you probably shouldn't do that. It's not proper. It's lying, right? But at the same time, that same rabbi would give her gifts of some kind. I forgot what exactly Gemara said. And somebody asked, like, why are you giving her gifts? Like, she's not doing anything you ask her to do. Why would you give her gifts? And he says back to this person who's asking this, this is last week's Daf Yomi, he says, is it not enough that she's raising my children? Is it not enough that she's saving me from sin, that I have someone I can be with intimately in a physical way? I have to praise her. I have to gift her things to her. I have to appreciate her. It's true she does some things wrong, but I still have to appreciate the good she does for me. And that's the perspective we should all have. And of course, we don't have spouses that are doing such terrible things. We don't have relationships that are people doing such terrible things. All the more so, we should appreciate the good things. So that's what it means. When you have a good spouse, you can work together So then ultimately you will curry favor with Hashem also, because they'll be able to, they'll feel comfortable enough to keep you in line. And there's a lot more to talk about this. We can talk about relationships. We go into a whole thing about what it means to be a spouse that's willing to talk to your husband or wife about what they're doing wrong so that you can do mitzvot better. That's why Yafek Rasam and Hashem, to curry favor with Hashem, is because you have someone telling you what you're doing wrong. If you can't tell your spouse about something that's going wrong, then you have to work on your relationship. That's what the spouse is there for, to keep you in line, to keep each other in line. Make sure you're working together, working on your own to become better people. Next, the pasuk tells us in Chav Gimel, Tachanuni midaber rash. A pauper, rash is a poor person. A pauper, a poor person, is always asking for things. Tachanunim, supplicating others. Va'asher yana azos. And the wealthy person is always responding brazenly. The pauper is obviously at the risk or at the mercy of the person with the money. He needs money, so he's going to ask very nicely, please, can I have the money? Right, people know the Karlbach story of Yeslo the holy miser. Yes, that's the same. That's right. Very good. Yeslo. This is Joseph, right? Joseph's on the stream here. There's a so he used to be called Joe, and his mother, on her deathbed, said to him, "Your name is not Joe. Your name is Yasala from Krakow," because he had a great great grandfather who was Yasala from Krakow, the holy Yasala, the holy miser. And there's a whole story about Karlbach, and people know the story. Karlbach says it all beautifully, obviously. And he's speaking at this conference, and the head of the conference, his name is Cardinal Joseph something or other, and Karlbach gave his presentation to all these other religions and whatever, and he told over the story of Yasala, the holy miser, as a way to inspire people to give tzedakah, whatever. And the next day, somebody who was supposed to speak wasn't able to speak, so the cardinal asked Karlbach to say the same story over again. And then he asked him a third time to say over the same story. So Karlbach came over to him afterwards, and he did it again. He said, why do you want me to say the story so many times? And then he told him that my mother just died, and she told me that my name is not Joe. My name is Yasala from Krakow. And you're talking about my great-great-grandfather. That was the Karlbach was telling the story of Yasala the Holy Miser. And I had said to God, I said, I have this whole career as a cardinal in the church, the whole thing. I can't give it up now. But my mother just told me that I'm really Jewish. So what am I supposed to do with that information? Bless Hashem, please give me a sign. And then that's when Karlbach told the story. That's sort of apparently how the story goes according to Karlbach. And then he moved to Jerusalem and became a rabbi, whatever, the whole thing, you know how it works. But the story of Yasala the holy miser was that the poor people would come to his house and they would always think, I know he's a miser and he never gives anybody money, but maybe I could get some money out of him. And he goes, and Yasala brings him in so nicely and asks him, how much money do you need? And the poor person goes through, well, I have this many children, and this much for the food, and blah, blah, blah. And then Yasala says to him, or Yasala at the time, sort of shifts gears and says, you think that I worked for my money to give it all away? Of course not, get out of my house! And he's very aggressive, and he throws him out. And sooner or later, the poor person, unbeknownst to them, gets an envelope under their door for exactly the amount of money that they need, and nobody ever knew. Nobody ever knew where the money came from. But it was Yasala, the holy miser, who was giving them the money, and it's only once he died and all the poor people came to the rabbi and said, Rabbi, I don't know, all of a sudden we're not getting our envelopes anymore. Why aren't you giving us some envelopes? The rabbi said, I don't know what you're talking about. And they realized it was Yasala, the holy miser, that was doing it all along, and he was buried outside of the city, and the rabbi made everyone go and ask forgiveness from Yasala, the holy miser, and then he buried him over there. The story goes, I think you can still see the grave, he's buried alongside of Yom Tov Lipman Heller, which is apparently at least when the story happened, and it's a joint tombstone together because of the Yasala, the holy miser, that they disrespected, so they gave him this respect, that they buried him like this. And there's a whole story about this rabbi, Rabbi Yom Tov Lipman Heller, Karlbach says, he saw him in a dream, and Yasala, the holy miser, spoke to him and said, yes, it's true, I did all those things, but I never wanted any credit, and that's why I never told anybody that I was doing it. And this is sort of like a very poignant part that I always, in classic Karlbach style, he says over something like, he says something to, the rabbi says something to Yasala in the dream. He says something like, what's it like in heaven? Are you seeing the forefathers? He says, yes, I see Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. I see, Sarah, Rachel, Leah. But there's one thing I miss. There's one thing, yes, I was zochet to be with the righteous people because of all the tzedakah that I gave. There's one thing I miss. And that is there are no broken doors in heaven. And there are no poor people in heaven. And I wish I could just give more tzedakah. That's all Yasal Elmazer said. It's a beautiful line. There are no broken doors in heaven. There are no poor people in heaven. That's how he says it. It's a beautiful, beautiful line. So we have to make the most of our world that we have. But anyways, this reminds me of Yasal the Holy Master, at least as people saw him. Because Tachanuni Midaber Rash, the poor person will speak with such supplication, please, I need some money, please, can you give me spare some change? The Asher Yana Azas. But the wealthy person will still speak praise. And it doesn't matter how soft they speak, the wealthy person doesn't feel any obligation to the person. And they'll speak harshly to them. In last week's Parsha, I think it was. I remember. There's a whole drasha from the Kli Yatkar about Pasuach Tiftach Chesed Chaleimor. You should open your hands to give to poor people, saying. What do you mean saying? You're supposed to open your hands to give them money. What does it mean? Pasuach Tiftach Chesed Chaleimor. What do you mean to say? So he says it's more important to speak kindly. More important to speak kindly to the poor people beyond just giving them money. Make sure that they feel wanted. They feel the sensitivity of what you're giving to them, not just monetarily, but also socially. That's what I think of this pasuk. If you look at the Meiri says that this could be understood homiletically. I don't have the Meiri. I have it here in an article footnote. Let's see. Does I have it here? Skipped. Here. The Meiri comments that a learned man is wealthy. Someone who thinks that they know a lot of things, he's an ashir. So then, ya'ana azos. He's going to speak brazenly. He thinks he knows everything. He's going to speak haughty. He's going to haughtily. He's going to have a certain egotism, and speaks with the decisive confidence. However, one who is a pauper in knowledge should use equivocal terms such as maybe and possibly. That if you see yourself as a poor person in terms of knowledge, so then you'll speak with all these qualifiers. You'll never say anything in absolutes. I try very hard to never speak in absolutes. And it's annoying to some people, very annoying, because people say, Rabbi, should I do this or should I do that? And I'll say something. I think maybe you should do this. Or, it's probably better if you do this. Well, Rabbi, tell me what to do. It's a good thing you do this. But I'll rarely speak in absolutes, especially if it's not something that I know for sure. And I don't know if it's a personality thing, but I definitely learned it from my Rebbeim also, Rav Schechter. Story about this. I think I said it over before, that someone asked Mishaila and he says, I think you should do this. And the guy goes to a different rabbi and then comes back to Rav Schechter and says, so-and-so said I should do this. And Rav Schechter says, yeah, that's what I said. And the guy said, no, you said, I think you should do this. And Rav Schechter says, yeah, that's what I mean. You should, I never say anything in absolutes. I never know for sure. Who am I? Hashem? We don't know anything absolutely. But the way we should speak is always with a semblance of humility to understand that maybe we are not 100% clear on our understanding. So that's tachanun midabarash. You should always speak with a certain supplication, a certain unsureness. Lastly, a very interesting pasuk. Ish re'im lihit ro'eya. A man of friends will beget more friends. Lihit ro'eya. That's a very interesting word. We'll get more friends. Like we have to le're'acha. Come up with the same word. Re'ya. Re'im ahovim. So v'yesh ohev davik me'ach, and there are those who love greater, there are lovers who cling more closely than a brother. Rabbeinu Yonah has a very interesting interpretation of this. Rabbeinu Yonah says like this, Milvad hakavod hamagia min hachaverim v'ha'ohavim timtza b'davar hatoelas. Besides the fact that you have a strong social bond, and you'll have a good, a positive, attitude in life because you have so many friends. But beyond that, there's another benefit. Ki ulai yikar makrehu. Good thing will happen. Precious things happen. She yikne besuch mar bisreav vi ohavav ohev ne'aman. Through having a lot of friends, you'll find a really good friend. through having a lot of friends, you'll find a really good friend. V'tov yelo me'ach, and that person will be even better for you than a brother. He'll even be more loyal, more giving, more invested, more committed than your own brother. Ki yesh ohev davik me'ach. There are some people that love you more than your own brother. And it's such wise words. We can be friendly to everyone, but that doesn't mean they'll be friendly to us back. And you should get it, you know, be friendly, have as many friends as possible. And when you have that attitude, when you have that approach, that affect towards other people, eventually you'll find some really good friends. Really good friends. You'll be friends with everybody, friendly with everyone. But then you'll find some really good friends.
Well, it's okay to have a lot.
It's okay to have a lot of friends. I think there are qualifiers to that, but we'll leave it at that. You know, if you have follow-up questions, we can take them afterwards. But certainly there's an aspect of having too many friends. Stretching yourself too thin will not create the strong bonds that you want with the specific people. I was once learning by a community rabbi. He said that the maximum amount of members that you can have in a shul and maintain strong relationships with all your members is about 200. It's an interesting line. And there's interesting data that backs this up from, I think, the Heath brothers talked about this. Although I have to check up on that. Can't remember who it was. It sounds like it would be from Henry Cloud's The Power of the Other, but I'm not 100% sure. I'd have to look it back up. But the concept of maintaining mutual friendship is only good if you have a restriction to how many friends you have. Too many friends, you're stretching yourself too thin. You don't know everyone. You can't possibly know everyone that well. So there is a limit to that. But the point is that when you cast a wide net, you'll get to know some people in a very positive way, and you'll get to feel out who can be a really good friend. It's a very interesting concept that I wonder what are the extremified ramifications of. Should we try to find those good friends and then maintain those good friends? Should we maintain all those friends? Should we stay, you know, very close to that friend and not send any sort of cut our losses? I know a guy who said to his wife, stop inviting people over for Shabbos meals. I'm already 50 years old. I have my friends already. I don't need any more friends. Right? I have enough friends. You don't need more people. So there's that attitude. But maybe there is, maybe that's a justified attitude. Maybe there is a restriction, a limit to how many friends you should have. But here at least, says the Rabbeinu Yonah, you should have many friends so you can find those good ones. Those good ones are going to be the ones that are most important for you in your life. Something, you know, when something hits the fan, you ultimately, you know who to turn to. You'll have those outlets to call up and to get the help that you need. So we'll leave it at that for Perek Yud Ches Mir Tashem. Next week we will continue with Perek Yud Tes 19. Moving along here in Sefer Mishlei. Thank you all for coming. And Mir Tashem, I'll see you guys next week.